this week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
We are your constituents. We are your citizens. We are here in this country, and we're not getting the help we need. And that's a shame. That's a shame that our own president can't step up and see this and understand it and help us.
East Palestine, Ohio residents are furious. While they can't get health care, the Biden administration wants $66 billion for more military weapons to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan.
Assad's regime committed some of the worst atrocities of the 21st century, including using chemical weapons, literally, on his own people. His own people.
Illinois Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib repeats the long discredited allegation that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad used chemical weapons on his own people.
Fomenting civil war. I think the right wants to create that, and they want to make America white again. It's too late.
Eddie Canales of South Texas Human Rights Center discusses the conditions on the Texas-Mexico border. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Akua Holt. On February 16th, President Biden visited the East Palestine, Ohio site of the Norfolk Southern Railroad wreck that took place a year ago. After the wreck, Norfolk Southern ignited a massive amount of highly dangerous and deadly vinyl chloride to get the railroad going again without objection from the Environmental Protection Agency or the Department of Transportation. The residents and workers have been left without health care in contaminated homes and without assistance to vacate. Pacifica's Steve Zelter spoke by phone with resident and pipeline worker Chris Albright and others from the East Palestine community. He also talked to Mike Shade of Toxic Free Future, whose group has issued a statement signed by over 200 organizations calling on President Biden to declare East Palestine a mass casualty site so that all residents and workers could receive health care for life. The statement also calls for full testing of community members and sanitation workers who are also experiencing contamination. East Palestine, Ohio residents were angry when they discovered President Biden refused to act or to offer health care, especially since many have lost their jobs. They are also furious while they can't get health care. The Biden administration wants $66 billion for more military weapons to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan.
Chris, all right. He's on the ground in East Palestine. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Maybe you can talk about, from your point of view as a resident and a worker, what's going on and whether or not the president is going to issue this mass declaration so that you can get health care.
Well, I can only hope that there is what he's going to do. That's the right thing to do. It's needed. You know, a lot of us here are suffering due to something that was not in our control nor our fault. Me personally, I have not been able to work since April of last year due to this. I developed heart issues. I'm suffering from severe heart failure. I have to take like 8 different medications every single day. And with that being said, my health insurance expired on December 31st. So I now no longer have health insurance to pay for these medicines that I need. I don't want to take them. I need to take them. And without him signing the Stafford Act, I don't know what's going to happen. My health will probably decline and I'll be dead. So he definitely needs to do this.
And also, we were talking earlier about the EPA, and the EPA was aware that vinyl chloride is a dangerous chemical And the EPA apparently allowed Norfolk Southern to ignite that toxin on the railroad cars. Your experience was that EPA was MIA, apparently. Is that the case?
Absolutely. We had no idea about the EPA, what they were doing, how they were doing anything whatsoever, until I had an article published about me and what's happened to me in the New York Times. The day after that article came out, the EPA called me. I didn't recognize the number, so I didn't answer it. And then the very next day after that, they were here at my door. Why weren't they here before? Why weren't they checking on everybody, not just me, but everybody, to see how everybody was doing, you know, and making sure that things were okay? We did have, at the one point in time, we were basically gutting our house and getting rid of anything that could have been permeated by the chemicals. We had a dumpster outside, and I just happened to be out there by the dumpster, and they were taking air readings, and they stopped right by our house and said they were getting an elevated reading right there.
Wow.
Didn't tell us what it was, didn't tell us if it was dangerous, didn't tell us how high it was, said nothing. Told me there was an elevated reading and went about their way.
And the fact that you've been basically forced to move back in the house, that Norfolk Southern hasn't been compensating people for their homes if they want to move out, you're basically locked into what is a nightmare situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can't, especially with me not working right now. I have no income as of right now. I'm bringing nothing into this house. How are we supposed to move? We'd love to be able to get out. We love this community. We love this town. We love the schools. But we need to get out for our health. And we just can't do that. We just can't pick up and go. You know, financially, it's impossible. Just picking everything up. My wife has been in this house for 20 years now, I believe, 19, 20 years. You know, just to pick everything up, find a place. We have two dogs and a cat that's going to take pets. We have, you know, two kids still living at home. We just can't do it. We'd love to be able to get out, but we just can't do it. Actually, we just can't do it.
And, you know, President Biden is visiting that community today. And we were talking earlier that he could issue a declaration. What's going on? Why wouldn't he want to protect the residents of East Palestine, the workers and residents of East Palestine who are stuck in this situation? I'm sure President Biden wouldn't want to have to be forced to live in East Palestine for probably one more than a day.
Russell, did anything the president say reassure you?
No. Leland, he showed up here with his hands in his pockets. We heard that there's grant money for universities to continue to tell us what's going to be wrong with us in years to come. Still no, you know, signed declaration of an emergency or a disaster. Still no low interest or forgivable home loans for people that want to get out of this toxic mess. Nothing on lifetime health care or medical monitoring.
More than anything. This town, everybody's property needs to be bought out for what it was worth before it happened, before they blew it up, because it was not an accident. There was no way that those train cars would have blown up, even though they said, oh, they were filling with gases. Maybe I look a little dumb, but I'm not. And I looked up everything, and this was all planned, soup to nuts, top to bottom. I live 20 miles airline away from here. 5 days after that happened, birds were gone. No more birds. For weeks, I didn't see a bird at my bird feeder. Oh, nothing is going on. No animals at all anywhere.
Well, the EPA told us it was safe to come back to your homes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, fine.
Like, it was great. It was come back to your homes. Because, like I said, I live right over there. Seriously, I'm less than half a mile.
What you're trying to do is, like, I don't know how to explain it, but you might as well piss in the wind, because Biden ain't going to do anybody.
I lost my girlfriend in December for lung cancer, and the year before she broke her collarbone, in November was the last x-rays of her lungs. She never had a spot on her lungs in November before the train derailment. Uh-huh. Then in October, she had a little spot about as big as a dime, and December, she was dead.
Turbo cancers in the water, in the air. They came up with this word all of a sudden, now turbo cancers. My husband just got diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer, spread into the bones. Not one symptom, not nothing. And all of a sudden, stage 4. Turbo cancers, water, air,
I'm
in the area.
I was a perfectly healthy man working a great job I had, and I now have severe heart failure. Yep. My heart is worthless right now. So yeah, trust me, I'm right there with you.
It's terrible. It's,
you know, I'm hearing you.
I mean, the community is having a rally today, members of the community for Trump. I mean, the government is calling for, I mean, this is the big issue in the U.S. government at this point. Congress, they want billions, $90 billion for Ukraine. They want money for Israel. They want money for Taiwan, billions and billions of dollars. Yet it seems that protecting the residents of East Palestine is not a primary issue in this country. It really is amazing. Is that why people in East Palestine are pissed off? One of the reasons?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, first of all, it took him over a year to come here. I understand we are a predominantly Republican conservative town. I get that. But he is still our president. He is still the guy who is supposed to be in charge of us and in protecting us. And he has done nothing. We have been completely forgotten. He has flown directly over top of us. You just mentioned how much aid we've given to foreign countries, Ukraine and everything. You know, we're in the billions of dollars. What about us? We are your constituents. We are your citizens. We are here in this country, and we're not getting the help we need. And that's a shame. That's a shame that our own president can't step up and see this and understand it and help us. And by definitely declaring the Stafford Act and getting us health care, that would be a huge step. Because I know I'm not the only one who is suffering medically and financially with this.
It found out that government staff who went there themselves got sick because of the toxin, that they didn't have PPE, they didn't have proper protection. So it sounds like not only can they not protect the residents and people of Palestine, they couldn't even protect government workers who came there to find out what was going on.
Exactly. I didn't even realize it, but at the time, whenever the New York Times was here interviewing us, that the workers were actually getting sick. They kept that quiet. They didn't say anything about that, and they just kind of let that go. Like, it's even right here, but 200 cleanup workers still arrive each day working on 1.4, you know, and it talks about them all being sick and they had to leave, getting sick whenever they were here. But it was okay, and it was safe for us to come back, according to the EPA.
And Mike, I mean, the workers, the cleanup workers, is there supervision and oversight of these cleanup workers? I mean, are they getting protected? Because you're dealing with highly toxic material, and people don't even know the effects of this long term. Go to clean up. I mean, so we're talking about all these workers being brought in, not being told of the dangers, and they themselves getting sick who are trying to clean up the site.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak to the specifics there, but we have seen in other situations where workers who came in to clean up after other major environmental disasters got sick. We saw it after 9/11 at the World Trade Center, where many folks that came in to do cleanup got sick. We saw it in the Gulf of Mexico after the Deepwater Horizon disaster, when dispersants were being utilized to clean up the pollution. Many of the folks that responded to the Deepwater Horizon spill got sick as well. So that's definitely a very, very real concern. And that's a key reason why we need the president to issue an emergency declaration so that people can receive the health care and other resources to protect themselves in the long term. Because we really don't know what the long term impacts may be. But here's what we do know. People that live in the community over the last year have gotten sick. People will probably only continue to get sick over time, because for some of the chemicals that people were exposed to, like dioxins and vinyl chloride, the cancers that people may develop, that may not materialize for decades. And that's why we need the government to step in and provide long-term solutions, not just Band-Aid solutions to this problem. And as the president prepares to travel and visit East Palestine today, now would be the best time, especially in an election year, to do the justice that to give justice to the community as it deserves. You know, now is really the time. And wouldn't it be such a great present for this community to hear the president issuing this emergency declaration today?
Those were the voices of East Palestine residents speaking with Pacifica's Steve Zelter.
City was gone. kind of disappeared. All my favorite places, my city had been pulled down, reduced to parking spaces. Hey, oh, where to go, Ohio?
Was the Pretenders, My City Was Gone. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Akul Holt. Next, Eddie Canales of the South Texas Human Rights Center discusses the conditions at the Texas border with Belly of the Beast Media, an independent news collective in Houston.
Emigraniada, emigrada, emigraniada, da, emigrada, emigraniada. We're coming rougher every time.
We're coming rougher, we're coming rougher.
We're coming rougher every time.
Hey, 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 hey.
We're coming rougher
every time.
Emigrada.
Hi everyone, this is V. Patel Adams, producer at Belly of the Beast Media. Our collective is based out of so-called Houston, Texas. So, because of our close proximity to the U.S.-Mexico border, we are well aware of the human rights violations that happen there on a daily basis by the United States of America. Recently, we had a chance to interview Eddie Canales of South Texas Human Rights Center in Falfurrias, Texas, who does a lot of work at the border around a variety of issues that concern people migrating, including the proper return of bodies of people who have perished near the border due to the United States' inhumane immigration policies. Here is journalist Demetrius Coins interviewing Eddie Canales.
On January 11th of this year, the Texas National Guard took control of Shelby Park in Eagle Pass, Texas, located near the Rio Grande River, and engaged in a standoff with Border Patrol agents. Border Patrol was dispatched to the area after the drowning deaths of three migrants, a 33-year-old woman and her two children aged 10 and 8, in the razor wire-infested waters. This standoff is currently ongoing. Republican leadership around the country have shown support for Texas Governor Greg Abbott's defiance of the federal government. Far-right nationalist and fascist organizations and collectives of various kinds have traveled to Eagle Pass to provide backup and assistance to the Texas National Guard. We asked Eddie what his perspective is on the situation unfolding there, why there seems to be a bipartisan assault on migrant human rights, and what are the ultimate goals of the right in this moment.
The question of going along the right and demagoguery and the xenophobic that exists right there, it's political theater. And again, Donald Trump personifies that. And they literally would want to get him reelected and close that border. The border was, you know, Title 42 essentially was just throwing people back without, if they had a legitimate political asylum claim to that effect. So one of the more important things I think is fomenting civil war. I think the right wants to create that, and they want to make America white again. It's too late. It's too late to do that. And then I think that's the reaction, and that's why the right wants to foment civil unrest, insurrection of capital, and the policymakers on the right are going along with that in terms of all the voter suppression stuff, and then coming down and just taking an enforcement-only approach at the border. It may be what's going on, but it's not working because people see the border as you said, it's not really the border because we're going to cross it and we're going to get to work because we have to work. for many people, it's a borderless terrain, but the enforcement and the militarization of the border and the surveillance and all of that for the sake of their solution. Nobody's offering any solution. I haven't looked at what the new person that went over there in New York is, and I'm going to say this, and I agree with you, Demetrius, that the Democratic Party always wants to protect its right flank when it comes to the question of the border, treating the border, maintaining the border as a national security question, as opposed to migration and economic terms. So they want to protect their right flank, and it doesn't make a difference.
We asked Eddie to go into further detail about the conditions that cause people to flee their homelands, and he shared with us the process that migrants go through in order to make it to the U.S.
The policy prevention by deterrence forces people to go to the more difficult situation, to the more the rougher terrain, away from where at port of entries, that's where the wall is. Okay, the walls are at international bridges, and the wall, it started all in 9-1-1 back then, in terms of putting in the wall and to 1 mile to 2 miles out from the port of entry. So that does force people to go to the more dangerous areas. So the process is you're coming in from a country in the south, whether it's Central America or South America, and you got to get through the through Mexico. And there, that in itself, there's over 120,000 people missing. And then you make it to the river, you make it to the U.S. Mexico border, and then you cannot cross the river without having any contact with the cartel. Because they're there, the river, that's their domain. That's their control. And then, so you've got to pay somebody to cross you over, and then they hand you over to somebody else, a guide or a coyote from the cartel, from organized crime, and then they take you either to a safe house, or right away you enter and you're taken through the brush, the chaparral, el monte, or people say el desierto, which is, you know, desert, but it's nothing but thick brush, grassland, and then it is humid, it is hot, it can be cold, and it's a very rough terrain, and somebody guides you through that. And then you circumvent the checkpoints, which is the ultimate militarization of the border, and you circumvent the checkpoints, you get to a point where they're going to pick you up, el levantón, the pickup, and then you're handed off to somebody that picks you up to take you through the big cities. Take you to Houston, to San Antonio, to Dallas, as the next station, to where from there you decide where you're going to go into other parts of the country. That's the process, and it all entails with the organized crime making billions and billions of dollars off poor people that are coming to work. And that exact act in terms of the cartel is created by the policy. And there is some complicity by the Mexican government, you know, for sure, in terms of some of who's getting the money and how that money between organized crime and the government in terms of being bearing the cash. Remember, people and drugs go north, guns and capital go south.
Finally, we asked Eddie what he wanted people all over this country to know about immigrants struggling to find a place here in the U.S. This is what he shared.
Well, I want people to understand that migrants, if you tag them as migrants, then you're forgetting the fact that these are human beings that are struggling to provide for families on a day-to-day basis. Many people come into this country for their next meal in that regard. And to understand that basic human rights and should be the format, should be the basis of why people should have the freedom to migrate and reside where they want to reside and work where they want to reside, where they want to work, and be a productive human being.
Belly of the Beast Media is an anti-authoritarian media and news collective based in so-called Houston, Texas. Through original reporting and analysis, Belly of the Beast strives to challenge the status quo narratives and beliefs of society. We produce revolutionary media for, by, and about the people. To hear the full version of this interview, please find us at Belly of the Beast Media, HOU, on social media, YouTube, and on Spotify.
In corridors full of tear gas, our destinies jammed every day, like deleted scenes from Kafka, flashed down the bureaucratic train. But if you give me the invitation to hear the bells of freedom chime, to hell with your double standard, we're coming rougher every time.
We're coming rougher.
To them we got nothing to say. Are emigrada, emigraniada. For them it's Don Quixote's kind of way. But if you give me the invitation to hear the bells of freedom chime, to hell with your double standard, we're coming rougher every time.
That was Gogo Bordello, Emigraniada. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Akua Holt. Last week, Illinois Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib introduced a resolution to pressure the UN Security Council to create an ad hoc international court to prosecute Syria's President Bashar al-Assad for alleged crimes against humanity. Pacifica's Ann Garrison has more.
Last week, the U.S. House renewed the brutal Caesar sanctions regime on Syria until 2032. At the same time, Illinois Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib introduced the Justice for Syrians resolution to push for the UN to create an ad hoc international court of law to prosecute Syrian President Bashar al-Assad for alleged crimes against humanity. Only the UN Security Council can create an ad hoc international court, and Russia would without doubt veto a resolution to do so. It's highly unlikely that Rashida Tlaib is unaware of this, so she seems to be grandstanding in support of U.S.-Syria policy rather than seeking an actual outcome. In her speech introducing her resolution, Tlaib renewed the widely discredited claim that Assad used chemical weapons on his own people, a claim the U.S. used as an excuse to bomb Syria.
Madam Speaker, over 600,000 killed. It has been over a decade since the start of the Syrian civil war, and victims of numerous horrific crimes committed during the conflict are still waiting for justice. In recent months, regional powers and dictators have sought to sweep the war criminal, the Syrian dictator, Bashar al-Assad, horrific crimes under the rug, and welcome him back into the international arena. Shame. Assad's regime committed some of the worst atrocities of the 21st century, including using chemical weapons, literally, on his own people. His own people.
In June 2021, I spoke to Gray Zone journalist Aaron Mate about the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons docs published by WikiLeaks, which prove that the organization released fraudulent reports of chemical weapons attacks to justify U.S., U.K., and French aerial bombing attacks on government facilities in Douma, Syria, in April 2018. Aaron Mete, could you tell us why you think the OPCW leaks are the most important story you've ever covered?
We're talking about allegations of a cover-up at the world's top chemical weapons watchdog to basically justify U.S. military strikes. And the evidence is overwhelming. So it's certainly the most important story that I've ever covered. And it's just incredible that it continues to be ignored by most of the media. You have this instance where the U.S. bombed Syria in April 2018, along with Britain and France, claiming that Syria was guilty of a chlorine attack. About a year later, in March 2019, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW, comes out with a report that aligns with the U.S. narrative that Syria was guilty of a chlorine attack. But then you get this extraordinary series of leaks that would show that the actual OPCW team that went to Syria wrote up a report, found no evidence of a chemical weapons attack, raised major inconsistencies in the claims that chlorine gas was used, but that their report and their findings were censored. And not just censored, but in fact that their superiors tried to basically write a bogus report, a bogus version of their report, falsely suggesting that Syria was guilty. And that led to this standoff internally where the original team, led by the key inspector who wrote the original report, protested the censorship. And that resulted in two extraordinary things. First, a U.S. delegation came to The Hague, met with the team, something that has never happened before, to my knowledge, in OPCW history, and tried to convince them to basically ignore their own findings and conclude that Syria was guilty of a chlorine attack. And when that didn't work, the original team was basically taken off of the case and replaced by a so-called core team that consisted mostly of people who didn't even set foot in Syria. And since this has come out, what has happened? The OPCW has refused to address the documented scientific fraud. They refused to meet with the inspectors. And when you have people alleging wrongdoing, and you have documents showing the massive distortions that took place internally, and you have a multi-year refusal to meet with the people lodging the complaint, what does that tell you? It tells you that there's something to hide. And what the OPCW is hiding is its cover-up. So it's basically covering up its own cover-up. And amazingly, the U.S. has been basically complicit in the cover-up, because with the exception of a couple of outlets like the Gray Zone where I work, the story has been completely ignored. So it's a story in itself, just given the facts of it. But then you, compounding that, you have the prevailing media refusal to cover it, which makes it even more important for me to go after it.
To many of us out here in Pacifica land, the U.S. war in Syria has been an abomination and a violation of international law from the beginning, with the covert support of forces that were trying to topple the Syrian government. Why is this incident so much more important than the others?
I'm not saying it's more important, but it's just so extensively documented. There are reasons to doubt all the previous allegations of these chemical weapons attacks by Syria. Just on the surface, they make no rational sense. Why would Syria do the one thing that it knows would invite U.S. military intervention, especially if you look at case after case when it's on the brink of victory in the areas involved, as was the case in Douma? But in the case of Douma, you just have this added component of a cover-up at the OPCW, or the censorship of the investigation that actually got on the ground to investigate this. And all this effort now being made to ignore the inspectors who brought that cover up to light, who challenged it from within. So I'm not saying it's more important, it's just so extensively documented, which makes the prevailing refusal to cover it that much more shameful.
Okay, can you talk about ARIA formula meetings of the United Nations Security Council that you addressed first on September 29, 2020, and then April 16, 2021?
Those meetings were held in the context of a prevailing refusal by the OPCW leadership and the states that bombed Syria, the US, UK, and France, to hear from the inspectors. And of course, what was the response from the states that have tried to bury the scandal? They don't address it on the substance. They just say that all this is the result of Russian disinformation, and they change the topic. They bring up side issues like Alexei Navalny, which, whatever you think about that issue, has nothing to do with the OPCW cover-up. The reason why they don't want to address the cover-up is because the facts are so damning to their narrative, so they just have to try to pretend that it doesn't exist and change the topic.
This international institution, the OPCW, and international institutions that are supposed to rule on issues of peace, justice, and democracy, and determine whether or not atrocity reports are true. This is including like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. Could you say something about the importance of these institutions, even though they've obviously been corrupted at many points?
Even before this serious scandal, we knew that the OPCW was seriously jeopardized in its ability to carry out its functions independently. I mean, what happened to Jose Bustani back before the Iraq War? He was trying to bring in Iraq to the Chemical Weapons Convention. That would have been great for world peace, but would have been a disaster for the Bush administration's plans to invade Iraq, because it would have subjected Iraq to the kinds of inspections that would have undermined the Bush administration's pro-war propaganda. The U.S., because of its extreme power and financial leverage, was able to bully the OPCW into ousting its first director general. By the way, this happened shortly after Bustani's second term was renewed. So right after the guy gets an unanimous vote of confidence to a second term, John Bolton strolls in, threatens his kids, and manages to get him kicked out because he's standing in the way of the Iraq War. So that right there completely undermined the integrity of the OPCW. And so it's not surprising that 15 years later, the same sort of bullying is repeating itself. The U.S. was able to come in, have a very unusual briefing with the inspectors who went to Syria, meet them face to face, and basically tell them what they think that they should conclude. The fact that the OPCW's integrity is now compromised is not even in question, especially when you look at what the reaction has been since. In any normal case, when you have allegations of wrongdoing, especially these kinds of allegations, what's the obvious response? Investigate them. At least meet with the whistleblowers who are lodging the allegation. The OPCW basically has refused to acknowledge their existence. The only time they talk about them is to attack them in public and make false statements about them, as I've documented many times at the Gray Zone. So the OPCW is a organization with a major credibility problem, and it doesn't just raise a credibility issue with this particular investigation in Duma, but of all its other investigations in Syria, because it's very clear that there's an agenda here.
Norman Finkelstein said recently, with regard to Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, that these institutions are fallible because humans are fallible. And he said 99% of humans are corruptible, but they have a lot of status nevertheless. And so you have to criticize them when they're wrong and cite them when they're right. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, of course. And in the case of the OPCW, the dissenters have been portrayed as people attacking the OPCW, which is not true. They actually believe in the OPCW's mission and purpose very strongly. They've spent a large part of their lives working for it and trying to carry out its noble mission of freeing the world from chemical weapons. What they're doing now is trying to protect it from political influence. So there's no contradiction here in saying that the OPCW has been compromised, but that if that issue is addressed, that it could be a noble institution. It's not irredeemable.
There's really no alternative, is there?
Yeah, there's no alternative.
That was U.S. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib speaking on the floor in Congress, and Aaron Mate speaking to Pacifica's Ann Garrison. Mate's work exposing the chemical weapons fraud can be found on thegrayzone.com. Robert Glasper, so beautiful. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Akua Holt. Russian President Vladimir Putin condemned Tucker Carlson's anti-China propaganda during their interview in Moscow, and also chided Carlson for applying to join the CIA as a young man. Journalist Ben Norton documents the former Fox News host's long history of pushing for war on China.
The US TV host Tucker Carlson set off a political scandal by traveling to Moscow to interview the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. And this has led to a big debate in the US media, which, as usual, when we're talking about partisan US politics, completely misses the forest for the trees. Now, there are a lot of liberal war hawks in the Democratic Party who portrayed Tucker Carlson as a traitor for interviewing Vladimir Putin. And this is part of this liberal obsession with Russia in the US, which completely fails to understand what's happening politically. What's actually happening is that Tucker Carlson and his right-wing allies in the Republican Party, including Donald Trump, and Tucker is very close to Donald Trump, what they have been trying to do for years is to try to drive a wedge in between Russia and China, and they have been trying to push for war on China.
Russia is not America's main enemy, obviously. No sane person thinks it is. Our main enemy, of course, is China. And the United States ought to be in a relationship with Russia aligned against China.
So the idea that Tucker Carlson is anti-war is ridiculous. Tucker Carlson constantly publishes war propaganda against China.
The biggest threat to this country is not Vladimir Putin. That's ludicrous. The biggest threat, obviously, is China.
And the narrative that he has been pushing for years, back when Tucker Carlson was on Fox News and since he was fired from Fox News, the narrative that he's been pushing again and again and again is that the US should ally with Russia against China. The reason that he says that he's against war on Russia is because in reality, he wants war on China.
If Russia ever joined forces with China, American global hegemony, its power would end instantly.
Tucker has said this again and again and again.
If Russia and China ever got together, it would be a brand new world, and the United States would be greatly diminished. Most Americans agree that would be bad.
However, Vladimir Putin is smart enough to know that Tucker Carlson is a political operative acting on behalf of the Republican Party and Donald Trump, and that Tucker is trying to encourage division between Russia and its most important ally, China. So Putin pushed back against Tucker Carlson's warmongering anti-China propaganda in this interview that he did. Tucker claimed that China is going to be a new imperial power, supposedly, and Tucker claimed that China is supposedly threatening other countries in the BRICS alliance and is violating their sovereignty, and Putin pushed back against this nonsense. And Putin said that this is a boogeyman narrative. And Putin emphasized that China wants peaceful cooperation and that China's foreign policy is not aggressive.
The question is what comes next? And maybe you trade one colonial power for another much less sentimental and forgiving colonial power. I mean, is the BRICS, for example, in danger of being completely dominated by the Chinese economy, in a way that's not good for their sovereignty? Do you worry about that?
Well, we have heard those boogeyman stories before. It is a boogeyman story. We're neighbors with China. You cannot choose neighbors just as you cannot choose close relatives. We share a border of 1,000 kilometers with them. This is number one. Second, we have a centuries-long history of coexistence. We're used to it. Third, China's foreign policy philosophy is not aggressive. Its idea is to always look for compromise, and we can see that. The next point is as follows. We are always told the same boogeyman story, and here it goes again, through an euphemistic form, but it is still the same boogeyman story. The cooperation with China keeps increasing. The pace at which China's cooperation with Europe is growing is higher and greater than that of the growth of Chinese-Russian cooperation. Ask Europeans, aren't they afraid? They might be, I don't know. But they are still trying to access China's market at all costs, especially now that they are facing economic problems. Chinese businesses are also exploring the European market. Do Chinese businesses have small presence in the United States? Yes, the political decisions are such that they are trying to limit their cooperation with China. It is to your own detriment, Mr. Tucker, that you are limiting cooperation with China. You are hurting yourself.
As that clip shows, Russia can clearly see that this is a strategy that is trying to isolate China and trying to divide the BRICS. Putin is too smart to fall for this, but we can clearly see this is the US strategy. Now, the irony is that the Western hysteria over Russiagate, this nonsense liberal conspiracy theory, actually prevented the far-right Trumpist elements, and also in Europe, people like Marine Le Pen, it prevented them from realizing this strategy of allying with Russia against China. And it basically guaranteed that at least in the medium term, for years to come, Russia and China are very closely allied. And that is going to prevent the US in many ways from trying to divide the BRICS. Now that's why the US is instead focusing on India and trying to divide India and China in order to try to weaken China. But you cannot understand the geopolitics of the situation with this nonsensical Russiagate narrative that Trump and Tucker Carlson are Putin puppets. They're not. They want war on China. And Steve Bannon, who was previously the top advisor for Donald Trump, and he ran Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. Steve Bannon has said for years, quote, "We are at war with China," blatantly. He says it openly. We are waging war on China. This is the strategy of the Republican Party, of Tucker Carlson, of Donald Trump. They're not anti-war. They only oppose war on Russia because they see Russia as Christian and white and capitalist, and they want to ally with Russia against China, which they see as Asiatic and non-white and communist and atheist. So they see China as an existential threat to so-called Western civilization, and that's why they want to ally with Russia. And since getting fired from Fox News, Tucker Carlson has repeatedly churned out this ridiculous anti-China propaganda, claiming, for instance, that China is fueling an invasion of America. And if you actually believe that, then the solution is war. He's calling for war on China because he's claiming that China is invading the US. Tucker has also done ridiculous interviews with Donald Trump in which they claim that China is an imperialist power taking over so-called our hemisphere, claiming that the US controls the Western hemisphere. Here's a clip of that.
Why is China allowed to conduct imperialism in our hemisphere?
Well, yeah, and it's far beyond Cuba. It's all over South America.
Yeah, the Caribbean.
China's building military installations in Cuba. The Cuban population of Miami is not too happy because they're never going to be able to go back. And installations means military installations. Okay, you know, there's just some communication. They did that on the islands with Japan.
So this is the ridiculous warmongering propaganda that Tucker and Donald Trump are promoting together, claiming that China is conducting imperialism, and completely falsely, they're claiming that China is building military bases in Cuba. Completely false. But once again, this is the warmongering anti-China propaganda that Tucker Carlson has continued doing since getting fired from Fox News. It wasn't just when he was at Fox. Now, Tucker Carlson in recent years has tried to rebrand himself as a so-called populist. But in reality, Tucker Carlson worked for many years in the mainstream corporate media in the US. He started at CNN before later going to Fox News. And Tucker Carlson comes from a very powerful background, a very powerful, wealthy family. And his father, Dick Carlson, was the director of Voice of America, which is a US government propaganda outlet, which is very closely linked to the CIA and other US spy agencies. And in fact, Tucker Carlson himself, when he was in college, he applied to join the CIA because he supported the US empire so strongly and loved the CIA. In fact, in the 1980s, Tucker Carlson went to Nicaragua to support the CIA's far-right death squads, the Contras, against the revolutionary Sandinista government because he loved Ronald Reagan. He was an extreme anti-communist and he was a blatant cold warrior. He supported the CIA and supported the Contras in Nicaragua. Now, it's very important to understand how Tucker Carlson in recent years has tried to rebrand himself. And in fact, Tucker Carlson started his career as a neoconservative warmonger. Tucker strongly supported the George W. Bush administration and its invasion of Iraq, its illegal criminal invasion in 2003. And back in 2006, Tucker Carlson demonized Iraqis as, quote, semi-illiterate primitive monkeys. He's an extreme racist. And he used this extreme racism to justify US colonial wars. In 2006, Tucker Carlson said that Iraqis are, quote, semi-illiterate primitive monkeys. He said that Iraqis, quote, don't behave like human beings. He said that he has, quote, zero sympathy for Iraqis. And he said that the U.S. should invade Iraq because it is a supposedly backward culture where, quote, people don't use toilet paper or forks. It's completely false, of course. He said that Iraqis should just, this is an exact quote from Tucker Carlson, Iraqis should, quote, just shut the F up and obey the U.S. because, quote, they can't govern themselves. And he also said that Afghanistan would never be a, quote, civilized country because the people are not civilized. So he's a colonialist. Tucker Carlson has always been a warmongering imperialist. But the reason that he opposes the proxy war against Russia in Ukraine is not because he's against war. It's because he wants war on China instead of war on Russia. It's blatantly obvious that Tucker Carlson is an imperialist when you see him talk about Latin America and also Africa. Every time he talks about Latin America, he says that China is trying to take over our hemisphere. And back when he was at Fox News, he went to Brazil to produce a documentary that was propaganda for the far-right leader Jair Bolsonaro, who is very pro-US and very anti-China. Basically, Tucker was meddling in Brazil's election, like what the US absurdly accuses Russia of. It's what Tucker Carlson was doing in Brazil to try to prevent the leftist Lula da Silva from coming back to power. And in that propaganda that Tucker did for Bolsonaro, he invoked the 200-year-old colonial Monroe Doctrine and said that China is violating the U.S. Monroe Doctrine and trying to take over Latin America. Here's that clip.
In 1823, President James Monroe announced a policy that has been the center of American foreign policy for the last 200 years. Called the Monroe Doctrine, it has a very simple thesis. Great powers would not be allowed to control nations in the Western Hemisphere. That would be a direct threat to the interests of the United States. And for 200 years, we haven't allowed it. Under the Biden administration, the Monroe Doctrine is no longer enforced. Constrained by its ideological concerns, consumed with petty political grievances, and above all, distracted by a faraway war in Eastern Europe, the Biden administration has abdicated its responsibility. And into the void left by the United States moves a new superpower. We've come to Brazil to see for ourselves the rise of China and how the government of China is replacing the United States as the dominant power in our hemisphere.
That is war propaganda. It is very important to educate yourself about operatives like Tucker Carlson, because he's not just an operative for the Republican Party. He's not just a conservative right-wing talk show host. He is a warmonger. It is completely ridiculous that people are trying to portray Tucker as anti-war or a threat to the U.S. deep state and the U.S. empire. It's the exact opposite. Tucker Carlson is a sophisticated political operative who admitted to applying to join the CIA and whose political role is to co-opt people who oppose the proxy war against Russia in Ukraine, and he is misleading a lot of well-intentioned people who don't want war on Russia and brainwashing them to want war on China.
That was journalist Ben Norton. You can find his report titled Putin Debunks Tucker Carlson's Warmongering Anti-China Propaganda Mocks His CIA Ties on the Geopolitical Economy Report YouTube channel. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective with contributions from V. Patel Adams, Steve Seltzer, Ann Garrison, Polina Vasiliev, and myself, Akua Holt. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at Pacifica CRD. I've been your host, Akua Holt. Thanks for listening.